This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The events of this moment are undoubtedly key in voters' thinking as they're making decisions for this year's presidential election. But it's hard to consider the vote of 2020 without thinking about what happened 4 years ago in 2016. Donald Trump's presidential win in Michigan was pivotal. And a big factor in that win was the support that he got from white evangelical voters. This year, an effort is afoot to ask those same voters to think about their vote in a little bit different way. Doug Padgett is the executive director of Vote Common Good. It's a nonprofit group that is campaigning, especially among swing states, and talking to evangelical voters about the top of the ticket. Doug Padgett, welcome to Stateside.
Hi, April. Really good to talk with you today.
Your group commissioned a poll this year that was executed in swing states, and it was designed by researchers at the University of Southern California, University of Maryland, College Park, North Carolina Chapel Hill was involved, and Duke University. Will you tell us about the questions that you wanted to have settled in that poll?
Yeah, you know, that poll, it really wanted to get at the question of the behavioral change in voters. And in some ways, this poll is a little different than others. A lot of times polls are about the political environment. This one really wanted to ask an additional set of questions. And that was, what is it that motivates voters, especially evangelicals and white Catholics, when they are considering their vote in this election? So the poll was put together by behavioral change experts. And one of the questions we were asking is what you alluded to, and that is, are these particular faith-motivated voters thinking any differently or being motivated differently in the election in 2020 than they were in 2016? And we did see a change that many of these voters are not going to be voting for Donald Trump or are going to be voting for Joe Biden when they didn't vote for Hillary Clinton in 2016.
What do you see as the key issues that made some people roll the dice with Donald Trump in 2016? I say roll the dice, but he was the Republican nominee, so maybe it wasn't that much of a gamble from some people's perspectives.
You know, it wasn't so much a gamble for some people who thought about if they're going to just vote for the standard bearer of the Republican Party, regardless of who that was. But it was a very difficult decision for a lot of people to have to vote for Donald Trump. And they either said they would give him a try in 2016, or they sat out voting for the presidential candidate at all. That's where we saw the biggest change, that voters in 2020, an 11% swing of Catholic and white evangelical voters toward Joe Biden, 11% increase over their 2016 voting patterns. And the biggest reason was that they found Donald Trump to be unkind. And I think a lot of us can understand why. It's part of the reason we're motivated as Vote Common Good to get out on the road and to ask voters to not support this president, because his just way of behaving, his policies, and the way he enforces the power of the presidency feels so unkind and disconnected to many of the faith voters who want the world to be more generous and more kind.
What do you see as some of the key events in the past 3.5 years that might have been pivotal in getting some people to look at him with different eyes?
You know, we have spent the last 3 years talking to faith voters about why they voted for Donald Trump in 2016 and if they're planning to do so again in the 2020 election. And those who have said that they're not going to support him, depending on what time of the year and what year we have spoken to them, they've given different reasons. And that's because Donald Trump has continued to earn their loss of votes over these years. Every month seems to have a new reason and a new example. But people go back and they'll remember that Donald Trump was callous about putting kids in cages. Donald Trump was callous and cruel in responding to the people in his own administration who had worked for him. And then when they left, he turned on them. And they've watched his policies seem to disregard anyone who feels like they're in need or is struggling. And then the coronavirus came, and to hear Donald Trump say, 150,000 people are dead, it is what it is, doesn't fit with any of these people's own sense of morality, or for many of them, Jesus's teachings that blessed are those who mourn. To hear the president just callously say, we're going to move on, it is what it is. So every season of the last 3.5 years, voters have been able to tag this deep sense they have of Donald Trump's lack of kindness to behaviors, to policies, and to responses of this administration.
Didn't voters know the kind of person Donald Trump was in 2016? I mean, at that point, they'd probably heard the Access Hollywood tape. They'd probably seen clips of him mocking a reporter with a disability. And they'd almost certainly seen his conduct toward other candidates in the Republican Party who were also in the running for president. I mean, he wasn't exactly kind to people like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. I mean, when people are making political considerations, aren't they, at the end of the day, making a sort of realpolitik assessment of what a candidate's going to mean for them and their beliefs?
Yeah, they most certainly are. And boy, we have a program that we call Hindsight 2020, and it's talking with voters who voted for Trump in 2016 and who aren't going to in this election, and asking them these very questions, like, what happened? Didn't you know? And it's been shocking, almost to a person across the country, including people in Michigan. They've said, you know, we thought all of that was just political bravado. We believed him when he said that he would pivot and become presidential. We wanted to give him a try. We thought that, as I just watched an interview again last night that Donald Trump did in May of 2016 with Megyn Kelly, and saying, look, I'm a different person in different settings, and I know how to be presidential. And this is just what I do in front of the crowds. I'm an actor, basically. I'm a reality TV star, but I'm also a businessman. And when it comes time to be the president, I'll be the president rather than being this person you see on the trail. And we've all learned that we were swindled by this man, that he tried to bribe evangelicals with policies and promised that he would behave differently. And turns out he's the same in the work in the Oval Office as he is when he's has his phone in his hand on Twitter, as he is when he stands in front of people in the press room and holds a press conference, as he is when he's before leaders and standing in at war sites and war burial grounds and calling people losers and suckers. Like, it, these voters really feel like they were cheated. Donald Trump made a promise to them that he would be different, that he would act presidential. They made a bet that he would, and they lost that bet. So now they're saying they're not going to take that chance again because they know how he's going to be as president. And I'll also mention that a lot of them said, you know, politics feels like a binary choice. It's this one or that one. Mm-hmm. And so many people didn't feel that Hillary Clinton would be any better when it came to issues of honesty or kindness or warmth. And I think that's different with Joe Biden. I think they know that the contrast of what they've now seen in 4 years of Donald Trump after he's won the presidency and the contrast with Joe Biden is something that they're willing now to take a chance with Joe Biden and not to double down on this broken promise that they found with Donald Trump and how he's going to behave as president.
You know, there might be a case to be made that evangelical voters who, you know, aren't 24/7 news junkies might look at the situation the country's in right now, not putting aside the coronavirus, but, you know, if they do not see it ravaging their communities in the way it has some urban communities. If they look at the Supreme Court right now, I mean, we've had transformational change in the federal judiciary. If what they know is what they hear, you know, on Sundays in the pulpit about the fact that there is someone in the Oval Office who is really making some strides in terms of conservative values, espoused values, that, you know, they may feel like they got the deal that they wanted out of this presidency. What would you have to say to them?
You know, there certainly are a percentage of voters who feel that they don't want anything more out of a president than what Donald Trump has delivered. But many of these same people are looking and saying, boy, the Supreme Court actually did not behave in a way that we thought they would. Look at the latest rulings on gay marriage and on the support of people being employed regardless of their sexual orientation. Positions that I am glad that the Supreme Court took, but they went against these promises. They realized that no, abortion has not been criminalized in this country and is not going to be, and the Supreme Court has essentially made that clear, that there was no wall that was built, that these promises that Donald Trump made have not been put into effect, that while they continue to say that they've fulfill their promises on judges. You know, fortunately, judges are still bound by the Constitution, and they're not bound by Donald Trump's imagination about what judges are allowed to do. So these Supreme Court judges and federal judges continue to rule in ways that are consistent with the Constitution. And the idea that you could again try to bribe these voters with, just give me 4 more years and then you'll have the country that you want, And April, I agree with you. Look, most people don't pay attention to politics. And Donald Trump has made it even harder for people to want to pay attention to politics because of the way that he behaves and just how fearful and how separate we become as a country. People really fearing one another, not understanding one another. And it's never been this bad before. We've always been partisan, for sure. And in our lifetimes, we've had plenty of things to argue over and significant social change to manage. But it's never been like this. We all know, and certainly evangelicals know, that the president can't solve all of our problems. No one wants the president to solve all of our problems. But we don't want the president to be the problem. And so often what they're running into is realizing that, well, the president can only do so much. This one has done all that apparently he can do. I think they're calculating, what we found in our poll is that it's not enough to overcome his incompetence and his cruelty as the president. That what we want, all of us, is that the executive branch would know how to lead this country in a way that could be open and beneficial and kind to all. And so many voters in our poll and that we're meeting all across the country and the work that we're doing in Michigan this very week and over this weekend tells us that while it's not all evangelicals, certainly it's not all white Catholics, but that constituency that came out for Donald Trump in 2016 is deeply reconsidering their vote in this election. And that's because they've done the math. They've calculated what it's meant to their own conscience, to their own soul. And, you know, when I hear evangelicals say, and I hear pastors say this quite often, well, you have to make this kind of a bargain. You have to make this sort of a deal and have a person who doesn't hold your values. It doesn't sound like the Republicans that I heard back in the 90s and early 2000s who said the character counted. And I'm an evangelical pastor, so I've spent my time around these people, you know, my entire adult life. And they've always argued that you're never supposed to just take a devil's bargain. And it's as if they read the stories of the temptations of Jesus, or Jesus saying, what does it profit a person to gain the whole world and lose their very soul? And they're saying, oh, the whole world for my soul? That's a deal I'll take. And I think a lot of voters are looking at their very pastors and saying, really, that's the best you have for us, is that all we can do as a voter is again vote for the standard bearer of the Republican Party, even if it violates what you told us in the last election and elections before that and our own sense of right and wrong. I think voters are starting to push back on their own religious leaders and saying, perhaps there's a higher calling, what we call in our organization, the common good. And that's what should be driving us forward and not just our partisan decisions. And, you know, it can sound like that I'm just a Joe Biden surrogate, or that I'm out here just trying to make Democrats out of Republicans. And we're not. We're asking everyone to become people who care about the common good. And we're not asking Republicans to stop being Republicans. We're just asking them not to support this president in this election and to pursue the common good. And for a lot of people, this is a question of, what do they tell their children? Can they uphold the very values of their faith in their voting booth, just as they tell the people in their families and people in their churches to uphold their values in their workplaces and everywhere in culture? And then somehow to be told that you should set those aside for the support of this president seems like the kind of bargain that they shouldn't be asked to make.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Doug Padgett. He's the executive director of Vote Common Good. It's an evangelical group that is asking voters to reconsider an immediate vote for Donald Trump as he seeks re-election as president. Doug, so if I'm understanding this right, your group is only aiming at the top of the ticket this year, right?
You know, we think once a voter starts to consider the common good as their voting criteria, that's going to not only affect the top of the ticket, it's also going to affect the people that they vote for the House of Representatives, and in some states for Senate, if they have a Senate vote, and maybe all the way down to the state assembly level, that they start to say that there's something greater driving them. And boy, a lot of people, and I've been really surprised to hear this, they feel like the Republican Party, by attaching itself so deeply to the lack of kindness and incompetence of this president, needs to be reconsidered down ballot as well.
Yeah, there's an interesting history, recent history of activism within evangelical circles. You know, the movement toward environmental stewardship, especially amongst some younger Christians. And the Me Too movement has certainly made some ripples across the nation in congregations. Do you think it might be a little more complicated to find the spiritual or moral consensus down the ticket, given the diversity of opinion amongst Christians in this country?
Yeah, that's very, very astute. We've noticed this, those of us who paid attention to religious voters, for the last two decades, that there have been many movements toward not just younger people, but certainly led by younger people and also older demographics saying, hey, we do need to care about the environment. We need to care about those who are struggling other places in the world. We need to care about our immigrant and our refugee population in this country. And we need to solve some of these problems. And there was a while when Republicans were leading a charge on that. They wanted to have comprehensive immigration reform so people could live with full dignity in this country and their entire family. And Donald Trump has abandoned that for some fiction of building a wall and keeping the people from S-hole countries out. And many religious people are saying that's not what we think the policies of this country should be. And it's happening across the board, as you say, in the Me Too movement and the racial reckoning that's happening in this country. They want all of our government to consider deeply what the racial history and what the racial patterns have been in this country, and they want to see change. So this is part of the reason we know that Donald Trump's own personal behavior as the president is so off-putting. But Republicans are really on the wrong side of so many issues that matter to so many faith voters. They want racial reckoning. They want work with the environment. They want workplaces to be safe for men and women to work together. They want refugees and immigrants to know that there's a pathway for their connection to full inclusion in our society. Why all that has been abandoned in the last 4 years is really something that people are asking themselves, if that's the fault of only Donald Trump, or if the Republican Party needs to find its voice and find its roots again. And I would certainly ask the Republican Party to deeply consider what it stands for in our current political situation.
We know that people in ministry are walking into the pulpit every Sunday, a pulpit that's a bit of a powder keg. There are many, many congregations in Michigan and elsewhere where people with differing opinions are sitting side by side, if they are sitting mm-hmm. in the pews during the pandemic. It seems like a lot of ministers are a little reluctant to rock the boat in such a way that might alienate parts of their congregation right now. What role do you think, or are you asking pastoral leadership to play in this moment?
Pastors and clergy, they feel this struggle. They're not sure where to come down on this. And as a pastor myself, I spend a lot of time with other pastors. And, we all feel like if we lived and were pastoring in the 1960s during the civil rights movement, we feel like we know what we would have done. Or if we were pastors in the 1930s, as the rise of Nazism was growing in Europe, we feel we would have known what we would have done. Or during the Civil War, we say we know what side we would have been on. Or the rise of slavery in this country, we think we would have known how to speak out on the right side of history. Well, I feel like we're in one of those moments, and this is a crucible moment for clergy. And if they think they know what they would have done in all those other eras, but they feel like they don't know what they would do now, I would just ask them to consider the fact that this is that very moment for us. The mixture of politics and economics and social change and racial reckoning and a pandemic have now put us in one of those moments where future generations are going to look back and say, how did you respond? And did you act in 2020 as if this was just any other year in any other election and any other set of sermons that you were going to deliver? Now, having said that, pastors have a calling that goes beyond just partisan talk. So what we say to pastors is, preach the truth that you know about the calling that you have to your parishioners, and let them know that they don't give up their Christian commitment when they walk into the voting booth any more than you'd ask them to give it up when they walk into any other part of our society. And then we tell pastors that, their obligation is not only to their role and their job, they're also a citizen. They're also a person of faith themselves. And in their personal lives and in their personal interactions with people, to express their political views, and in their pulpit to express the views that their faith calls them to uphold. We often say to pastors, read the Sermon on the Mount on the Sunday before the election and let that guide the community when they vote. And if you can read the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes and still feel that your vote matches to vote for this president or for these Republicans in this election, then step forward in faith. And if you feel that quiet movement in you that says, this doesn't fit, this way of behaving, this way of us being as a nation doesn't fit this deep calling that I hear in the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount, then maybe your faith needs to lead you on November 3rd.
You know, there's no question that some faith leaders and congregants may feel this way, but, you know, to the extent that any of us were driving around much this summer, when you drive through the neighborhoods where a lot of evangelical churches are, when you drive through these communities, there are a lot of Donald Trump signs. And the polling shows us that there hasn't been substantial shift in some places in Michigan that went pretty hard for Donald Trump last time around, Northern Michigan and some of the state's exurbs. Realistically, what percentage of people do you need to reach if you're going to consider this effort a success this year?
If 5% of evangelicals in Michigan change their vote from how they voted last, either they voted for Donald Trump and they choose not to in 2020, or they didn't vote for the Democratic nominee and they do this year, 5% swing is more than Donald Trump's margin of victory in Michigan. In fact, just in Holland and Grand Rapids, just in those two cities, if 5% swing, that's more than the margin of victory, just over 10,000 votes that Donald Trump won Michigan by. We know that this is small amounts of movement. Now, we believe that there's a larger movement than just 5% of people who are evangelical who are going to vote differently in this next election, either moving their vote away from Donald Trump or moving it toward Joe Biden when they didn't vote for Hillary Clinton in 2016. So we believe that this movement is afoot. Now, that kind of 5% or 10%, you don't tend to see that in yard signs because you might think, wow, there's still 7 yard signs up out here. But there were 8 yard signs in 2016, or there were 11 yard signs in 2016, and now it's down to 8. And it can feel like, boy, everybody still supports Donald Trump all around here. But those little movements and those quiet movements are the ones that we track in our poll that we think really matter. And it was that very slim margin of victory that allowed Donald Trump to become the president of the United States. And we believe that Michigan is key, and Christian faith voters in Michigan are key, and evangelicals in the Christian community are key to this. So that's partly why we're coming into Michigan and doing these live events, socially distanced outdoor events, and do messaging campaigns. We like to encourage people to understand that this is a time to wake up, to speak up, and to stand up. And very often these faith voters who are stepping away from what their church or what their own community is asking them to do by voting for Donald Trump, they stay quiet. And we want to help amplify those voices. And it's been interesting, April. We do a lot of interviews and we ask people to speak to the press about this shift. And this has happened a number of times in Michigan. People say, oh, I'm not voting for Trump again this year. But you know what else? I'm not saying anything about that because I don't want to fight. I don't want to be ostracized in my friendship group or my family or my church. Right. So they're staying quiet about it. And it is this quiet voice that's going to show up on election day and it's going to make its opinion known by what happens in the ballot box.
Doug Padgett is the director of Vote Common Good, which has events scheduled today through Monday in Muskegon, Holland, Grand Rapids, and Warren. Doug, thank you very much for giving us a few minutes of your time.
April, thank you for your time. It's great talking with you.